Hello. What is up, everybody? It's the Wind Up Podcast. My name is Mike. I am your host. I am of MTGA Wines, and we're back after a couple of week hiatus, a little bit of downtime before the madness of the harvest season kicked off, which it did just two short days ago. This episode is coming at you on Friday, September 5th. I'm a little bit later in the week than is normal, but I've also taken a little bit of break to decompress, get some R&R in before we are locked in and loaded for the rest of this harvest season. So I appreciate you all and your patience and waiting for me to get these episodes back up and running again. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about, including where we've been over the last couple of weeks. Harvest has in fact started. So we've got a harvest kind of outlook to get into and kind of what we're seeing right now in the moment as grapes are starting to come in for everybody. There have actually been quite a few questions and critiques about my take on additives and what things are utilized in winemaking, wine processing, and why I am so against them or appear to be so against them. I'm going to touch on my kind of real opinion of them briefly. Maybe we'll dive into it a little bit more. I think many of you have taken the assumption that, hey, these things shouldn't be utilized in any way, shape, or form. You know, maybe that's a little hypocritical because many of you know of my love of hot Cheetos and things that are heavily, heavily processed. And you're like, well, you can't, you know, say no to these things being used in wine, but in other food items, they're fine. You're absolutely right. That would be hypocritical, but I have a different take on that we're going to dive into. And then there's a little bit of like this pet peeve of mine that's kind of resurfaced, I guess. And it's kind of like philanthropy at its worst, where there's this, you know, glaring expectation of like, you got to scratch my back if I'm going to scratch your back and so on and so forth, and how wineries in particular have really leaned on their philanthropic efforts for revenue specifically and driving revenue specifically. We're going to get into all that. If there's any particular topic, of course, that you're into, all of these will be timestamped in the description as usual, so you can jump around if you see fit. But please stick around, listen to the whole episode, see what we have to say. Before we get into it, of course, we have a handful of announcements. Please be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. You'll see updates for when these episodes do get released. You'll see up to the moment harvest updates, cellar updates, all that good stuff, wine releases. You can find us, of course, on YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. That is all where we are the most active. We are coming up on our fall wine release. That notice is going to be going out later this month, so you can head to our website, mtgawines.com, check out our wine club information, sign up for our mailing list to find out a little bit more information on the wines that we're going to be releasing this year and into next year as well. Please make sure you're 21 years of age or older to check all of that out. There's one more announcement, which is actually kind of exciting. We'll see how this actually works out, and it's in regards to the show here. We've been approached now through the platform where we post this, you know, and it gets spread across the interwebs, whether it's, you know, through Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. We've been approached by the platform to start, providing advertising to other organizations and things of that nature, and we have accepted. So some of you may notice that there is an ad at the beginning of the show. There's also a couple of ads at the end of the show. I hope it does not impact the listening quality or anything of that nature. We've very specifically kind of listed certain categories that we don't want to be a part of when it comes to advertising, but would love your feedback on it. This is something that I do for free, basically, and realistically, for every ad that you hear, we're getting a fraction of a cent. This is not going to be like some giant, glaring, you know, amazing revenue stream here. But if it allows me to, you know, improve the home studio here at some point, we can take whatever kind of dollars that we pool from this and make improvements to the show and do more for you guys. That is my goal. So we're going to explore it. We're going to see what's happening. Some of you have probably listened to the most recent episodes and heard some of these ads. Your feedback is always appreciated on it, but we're going to run with it for the foreseeable future. I know you know how to fast forward through a podcast anyway, so if you're upset about it, just fucking fast forward through the ad like I do to all the podcasts I listen to. Okay, don't worry about it so much. It's actually kind of exciting. I didn't expect this to ever get to that point where it could potentially be monetized. We'll see how it goes. I hope you're not annoyed by it. I know that I get annoyed by ads sometimes, and here I am, of course, shoving them into some of our podcast episodes, but, being that this has been like 3 years and just for fun, it's kind of cool to see it grow in this way, and we'll kind of see how it continues to evolve, and of course, if it is truly kind of a burden on the show here, we will reevaluate and all that good stuff. So, that all being said, I can't thank you all enough for the support, for continuing to listen, to download, to share this podcast with your friends. It wouldn't be at this point if it weren't for you, and we wouldn't still be doing it if it weren't for you all out there listening to it, providing feedback, giving us topics to dive into, answering your questions, things of that nature. So realistically, the popularity of the show is all your fault. You're welcome. All right, let's get into this, shall we? Let's figure out what we're going to get into after a couple of weeks of being on the road. I got to tell you, this is something that I try and do every year before we get into harvest. And it's kind of, one main event that I try and get to every year. But this year, the HBIC had planned a trip to Yosemite. Believe it or not, having grown up in California and Reno, Nevada, Brittany had never, and of course living out here in Napa for 20 years now, she had never been to Yosemite before. So that's where we were for quite a few days a couple weeks ago. We left on a Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, I guess, and had an amazing time. If you've never been there, it's worth the trip. I mean, even just to go, if you're flying it, if you can go there for like a day, even. It can be a long hike. It's kind of out there. I think, what is it? It's about a 3-hour drive, 4-hour drive even from us here in the valley. So it's not a short trip. If you're not into camping, I totally get it, because that's what we did. We just slept in our old VW bus while we were out there. But had the best time. I hadn't been to Yosemite since, probably since I was in middle school, high school maybe. It is still just as dumbfoundingly amazing and beautiful as the photos look. But realistically, a photo only does it so much justice. I mean, my goodness, it's just absolutely insane. I think the one downside, of course, to going in the summer is a lot of the waterfalls weren't flowing. In fact, like even Yosemite Falls right next to El Capitan is just completely dry. I mean, it was barely a trickle. I think Bridal Falls was still going. Maybe it was Vernal Falls that was still going as well. Mirror Lake, Mirror Pond was completely dry as well. You could walk around in the sand if you wanted to. But the views are just outrageous. We ended up driving around. We didn't do too much hiking per se, but it was a really nice kind of, all right, let's take a load off. Harvest isn't happening for a couple of weeks. Let's just slow play this and get some time out and about. We've been trying to do a lot more camping, especially just here locally, within kind of that 4-hour or so radius, whether it's out towards like a 45-minute drive to the Russian River, Yosemite, of course, up the coast, past Jenner. It's been kind of been our new thing over the last couple of years. And it's nice that we have an old VW bus camper with a camper pop-up on it, so we can sleep in the back of the thing. And man, do I sleep like a baby in the back of that thing. It is just the absolute best. So for those of you that are planning trips to California, if you've never had the joy of seeing the great outdoors that is Yosemite Valley, I highly recommend taking a couple of days figuring that out. So it is very busy. Sometimes you have to book these trips way, way in advance because of how popular the park is. I think we booked this like 2 or 3 months in advance to reserve our spot. So it's a lot like trying to get reservations at the friggin' French Laundry out here. But man, was it worth it. And I mean, let me put it this way. We had booked 3 nights in Yosemite, and the park fee to camp there was $110, $115 for 3 nights. Of course, you got to bring in all your own food and got to worry about the bears and things like that. But we didn't see any bears. We kept all our food locked up, things of that nature. We were responsible about it. So not a big deal. But it was a very nice getaway. Shortly thereafter, this is the other part of this, is that Brittany, I left Brittany and a couple of our friends there, and I drove my happy ass out to Burning Man for the fifth time and spent a full 7 days there, basically a Friday to Friday, and it was absolutely terrible. It was the worst, and I had the absolute best time. I'm not going to get too much into that. Some of you have probably seen the headlines. Don't worry, they're totally sensationalized, and none of that stuff actually happens out there. It's not that crazy of a place. It's very normal. It's basically a yoga retreat, just dusty. That's totally what it is. If I run into you in person, you want to ask questions about it, we'll talk about it. But it was a good time. It was nice to get away, and it's kind of a good ritual for me to get out there and just kind of kick back, relax before the madness of harvest kicks in. Which, speaking of which, it has. Harvest is here. Shortly after driving my dusty ass back from that desert, the harvest season kicked into gear. In fact, the day after, or 2 days after we got back, we were on our way out to Clarksburg. We were checking in on our Chenin Blanc, checking in on our Grenache, and the Chenin was coming in on Tuesday, which is earlier this week. That would have been the 2nd, September 2nd it came in, yeah. It was delivered and went right into the press, pressed off into barrel, and those fermentations are already starting to roll. Every day we're out there checking up on them, giving them a smell, giving them a taste, making sure that these wines are rocking and rolling. It's probably going to be a full week before we bring in anything else. The outlook of this harvest is very akin to 2023 and the cool year that we were having. We just got through a bit of a heat spike, which honestly did us some favors. In terms of like kicking things along. But what's even better is that this week and in the next week, it's cooled off even a little bit more. So we're back into like maybe mid 80s or so when it comes to the weather. Really, really mellow, which is perfect after some of these heat waves. You get a couple of hot days where it's maybe a little bit much. And then these nice cooling trends allow the vines to kind of rest, relax, recuperate. I mean, shoot, it's not supposed to get out of the mid 80s. At all until maybe the 15th. So we've got like 10 days of just like very chill weather. And when that little bump in heat happens, it's gonna be like the low 90s. Like this is, I'm literally looking at the forecast like on my phone, like double checking this just to make sure Mother Nature's not throwing us any curveballs. This is, I mean, at least for us and the style of wine that we wanna make, and I know for a lot of others out there that are kind of like just really ramping up and just getting into what the harvest season is, you can't ask for anything better than this. You know, I think we would, there are probably some of us out there or some folks out there that would love a little bit more heat, you know, a little bit more warmth to help kind of kick things along. The nice thing is, though, that you can always like remove leaves, especially when you see the extended forecast and, you know, there's not a lot of heat coming. You can de-leaf a little bit. You can get more sun exposure on the fruit. You can help kick things along a little bit from a farming perspective. We're not having to irrigate a whole lot. Like the water stores should be looking really, really good in terms of our wells, in terms of the aquifers, all that good stuff. I mean, the ability to slow play a harvest like this and truly pick grapes when it is optimal cannot go. I mean, I cannot understate how important that is. You know, when we have a year like 2022 with an immense heat event where it's north of 110 degrees for a week straight, like that's when you got to make some really, and I mean really tough business decisions about how you're going to be operating through that harvest. And when you have a year like 2023 or this year in 2025 where it's been cooler, a lot more mellow, yes, it's going to extend the season. Yes, it's going to mean that there's going to be, you know, some folks still crushing probably come Thanksgiving, but the quality is just going to be, I mean, phenomenal. It's going to be phenomenal. Barring any, I mean, like knock on wood here, barring any crazy things that happen over the next few weeks or month, this is going to be another just like banner year. It's Mother Nature right now, as it stands today, is lining it up for us so we can just knock it down. And it's fantastic. You know, the fact that we're bringing in some fruit this week, maybe a little bit next week, and some maybe the week after, like, we're just getting to slow play this, take it nice and easy, and boy, am I excited. Like, it is lining up to be a really great year. It makes me a little bit sad that we're not making as much wine this year, just, you know, market conditions, everything that we've talked about from a business side of point, business side of things over the last year plus. We've downsized a little bit just because we're going to have a lot of inventory from 2022, also 2023. So we're going to probably be selling that for a little bit longer than what we would normally expect. So with that, it's like, all right, let's make a little bit less wine this year. Don't worry. For those of you in clubs and, you know, mailing lists and things of that nature, you're going to get your wine. I promise you, we're not making that little. But there's going to be just a little less to go around. You know, we're going to have to focus on some of the older vintages that we have hanging about where we have a lot of inventory to get through. Now that's just kind of the natural business ebb and flow side of the industry when it comes to harvest outlooks during, you know, rocky market conditions or even really great market conditions and how we adjust and ebb and flow and move back and forth. Anyway, that's a little bit of like the businessy back end of the harvest outlook side of things, you know. So what are we looking forward to? So the Chenin Blanc is in. That is in. That is fermenting right now. It is, oh man, probably about a third of the way, approaching halfway through its fermentation process. It's actually moving at a pretty fast clip. It's fermenting a little bit quicker than it did last year. Everything is smelling great, tasting great. It's the only white wine we're going to be making this year, actually. We're only going to be making Chenin Blanc this year, which is something kind of new and different. But quite honestly, it's been such a hit so far with the first vintage that we've decided to kind of shift our focus and put all of our energy into making that white wine, which frankly, I'm very excited for. As much as I've loved making Pinot Gris and Riesling in the past, you know, as we go down the line in the next few years, Chenin Blanc is going to be at the forefront of that, which I'm very, very excited for. The next thing that's going to be coming in are kind of our light reds. So this is kind of the natural trajectory of a harvest for those of you that don't know, is that you usually start with kind of your white wines and sparkling wines in particular. Like if you're making sparkling wine, that's already happened. They are in the works. You know, if you're Mum Napa, if you're Domaine Carneros or Domaine Chandon, Schramsberg, you know, you've been in the midst of harvest for like a full month at this point, where the rest of us have just started, right? Typically, when we see, like the rest of us still wine producers, when we see the sparkling wine folks get started, we're like, all right, we got about a month, maybe 6 weeks at the longest before we really start cranking away ourselves. They're always the first ones to go. And from there, that means we know that our white wines, maybe our rosé programs are gonna be right hot on those heels, maybe a few weeks down the line. So white wines are in first, like the Chenin that we brought in this week. Next week, we'll be bringing in some Grenache from Clarksburg for rosé. That'll be the HBIC rosé coming in next week. We may also be bringing in our Merlot on the 13th or the 14th. Those grapes are like towing the line of being ready. The sugar content's there. We're really just waiting for the flavors to get there. In fact, I'm not even going to be checking like the chemistry on those grapes anymore. Like all of that's in a really good range. What I really need to see is the flavor development. That's what I need to see. What's really interesting about this particular vineyard actually too is that the sugars have spiked, which is, you know, not abnormal, especially after a little bit of a heat wave, but the pH is still really, really low. Like they're very acidic, still tasting pretty green. So there's this little bit of like imbalance in the fruit right now where the sugar has spiked a little quicker than I'd like it to. And the acidity hasn't, the acidity and the greener characteristics haven't mellowed out as much as I'd like them to. So we were thinking about picking it even as early as this weekend. I called that off and we pushed it back a week because the fruit still just wasn't there yet. After tasting the juice, after chewing on some grapes out in that vineyard, it's like, this just needs more time. And what's great, again, going back to kind of the cool week that we're having, the nice easygoing season that we've had so far, those are the kind of judgment calls that you can just make almost on a dime and say, hey, this just needs more time. Let's wait. Let's make sure that we're harvesting this at the most opportune moment to make sure that we're creating the best wine that we possibly can. Once we get through the rosé and the Merlot, those are probably the next two things to come in. We'll be bringing in a little bit more Grenache for the Blair Paint label. And then, of course, we have our Cab Franc, which I know some of you out there love. And then our Cabernet Sauvignon. Those will be the last two things to come in. Right now, I'm ballparking that those are going to be ready. I'm probably guessing they could be as ready as early as the third week of September. So as we get towards like September, let's say like 15th, we'll really start checking in on those guys. It could be in by the end of the month. It might be the first week of October if it stays really cool. We'll see. And then from there, you were talking about, you know, a month of, you know, processing, fermenting, all the cellar work and stuff we have to do. And realistically, we're looking probably like we'll be done with harvest at like the end of the first week of November, maybe, depending on how things go. We have, of course, some sales trips and things that we're in the works and are in the works for the second week of November. You know, we were hoping to be done before then so we could do some more stuff out on the road, and that's just not going to be the case. So we had to, you know, move and shift some things around. But right now, that's what it's looking like. That timing should be about good, is that by the time the second week of November hits, we'll basically be wrapped up and just kind of doing maintenance on things. And while Brittany's on the road, while I'm on the road, we'll be kind of ships passing in the night for a little bit and just kind of double checking on some of these barrels and making sure everything's going well as we get into, you know, closer and closer to Thanksgiving. This harvest outlook, again, man, you cannot ask for like a better situation. It's going to be a long one. Having started this week and a little bit later than we normally would with some of this fruit, and very likely going to be continuing at least until early October, maybe even mid-October for that Cab and Cab Franc, depending on how those ripen up. I know the Cab Franc in particular was a little bit behind where the Cab Sauv was. It was cropped a little bit heavier. Not as many leaves were removed early in the season. So that's probably, I'm guessing, about a week behind the Cab Sauv. So let's say a Cab Sauv is coming in, you know, by the end of this month. Cab Franc's coming in early October, maybe beginning of the second week of October is kind of where I'm like ballparking everything, which gives us, you know, a good few weeks to settle everything out, get everything pressed and barreled down before we hit the road, which will be very different than some of the past years of like, okay, things are still fermenting. I'm going to be gone for a few days. Brittany, you got to handle everything. And then we flip-flop. That's kind of what's happened over recent years. But, you know, maybe we'll actually like put a bow on this harvest right as we start to hit the road, rather than having to like, jimmy back and forth to try and figure out how we're going to get all this stuff done and make sure the fermentations are, you know, settling out and making sure that all of our barrels are here and full and all these other things. So, I'm really hoping that the next 2 months go off without a hitch. That way, by about this time in November, we'll be kind of officially wrapping things up, cleaning up the cellar, and be moving on to the next phase of the year for us, which is closing it out strong, traveling around the country, slinging wine. Have wine, we'll travel. That's the whole goal. All right. Man, it's so nice for it to be harvest. It feels a little weird because it's so slow and so mellow. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, we got some grapes. We crushed them. It's in barrel. They're fermenting. Everything's looking good, tasting good. I feel like we're being lulled into like a false sense of security right now. Like it's going to be this long but relatively mellow harvest season. And I just know at some point shit's going to hit the fan and we're going to have to, you know, sort it out. I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't know how that's going to happen. It will. It always does. But right now, everything is just hunky-dory. And boy, am I happy about it, right? All right, so let's get into the hot topic, shall we? Let's get into the hot topic. We have harped a lot about additives in wine, why I hate them, why I think wineries need to be transparent and why they're kind of overtly lying to consumers about what they use or don't use, and that transparency is something that needs to happen in this industry. Let me take a little sip of beverage here because I'm going to be on one here for a minute. So gotta, you know, loosen up and hydrate before I stand on this soapbox of mine. So if you're new here, I highly encourage you to go back. This was a couple years ago. And over the last few years, we've talked a lot about additives in wine on the show. You can go back and scroll through some of the archives. They're certainly in the title regarding, you know, additives. I think there's a part one and a part two, you know, basically, you know, kind of what additives kind of like at a starting point can be used and are used regularly. And then I tried to do a part two of, you know, what my kind of real opinion on some of these are. We've touched on them on a fairly regular basis over the last few years. So if you haven't listened to those episodes, please go back. You can listen to them and also listen to, you know, what this podcast sounded like in the early days when I was still very much like figuring it out. I like to think it hasn't changed that much. Maybe it had. The format has certainly changed a little bit, but, you know, hopefully those are still good and, you know, relevant and that you enjoy them. You know, again, for kind of the introductory level here, you know, the wine industry and the alcohol industry in general, we're not regulated by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. That's kind of like the impetus for this whole thing. Because if we were, we would be like any other food or beverage product out there, where we'd have to list, you know, very likely some sort of, you know, table of contents and what ingredients are used in the production of our beverages. But we're not regulated by them. We're regulated by the Trade Tax Bureau, which is a spinoff or was renamed from the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms. It's just a tax agency. They really don't give a shit about anything other than that we pay them taxes on the volume of alcohol that we're producing. So, for example, if your wines are, you know, I think it's like somewhere between 10 or 12% and up to or maybe it's 8% up to 16%, you're in like a certain tax bracket, right? If you're north of 16, you got to pay a little more. If you're less than that, like beer and other things, you got to pay a certain price as well. That's all they care about. They want to make sure our labels have all the things that they deem necessary, and then they just want us to cut them a check. It's a tax agency. They do not give a shit about how we produce our wines. Period. Full stop. They have no idea, as a matter of fact. Go figure. An alphabet agency has no idea about the industry they're regulating. Crazy, right? Anyway, moving on from that. For that reason, as we've mentioned here many times, but I'll echo it one more time, is that wineries and alcohol businesses in general have no legal requirement to tell you, the consumer, what actually goes into their products, right? So any number of additives, flavorings, extracts, enzymes, fining agents, whatever, anything and everything can be used, and we don't have to tell you a damn thing about it if we don't want to, right? And that's my bone to pick. That's my pet peeve. The fact that you're going to tell me that certain brands like a Meiomi are equivalent or substantially equivalent, to use a lovely buzzword created by Monsanto back in the day, to something like what we do at MTGA is just blatantly wrong. For those of you that aren't sure why I'm referencing Meiomi in particular, please look up the news article that came out of, I believe, Leawood, Kansas, in a wine shop advertising how much sugar was in Meiomi versus another Pinot Noir. It's a great read. I believe it was published in the San Francisco Chronicle by our good friend Jess Lander. Check it out if you haven't checked it out. I'll put a link down in this description of this video as well, or this episode as well, just so you can find it quickly. But, you know, there's stuff like that, you know, where it's like, oh, you have a bunch of sugar in here. We don't. Yet these are both kind of these still red wines and are in essence kind of play in the same category, when in fact, they really shouldn't be in the same category. Just like I feel, you know, it's clear that like spirits aren't in the same category as wine, just like beer isn't in the same category as wine, right? These are all different things. Sure. Makes sense. Got it. Glad we agree. Now, what some of you have pointed out, and I've mentioned this as well when it comes to additives on a handful of times, is that I still love my hot Cheetos, man. I had a bag the other day. They're delicious. And if you read the back of a bag of hot Cheetos, there's all kinds of high processed additives, shit in there that realistically probably shouldn't be in the food chain in the first place. Now, I'm not here to debate the merits of those ingredients and dyes and things of that nature. What I'm here to debate is whether or not I know those are actually in there, right? That's the issue. Because I fully agree with some of you that I was probably coming off like a little bit of a hypocrite, saying, hey, in wine, it should be grapes, maybe yeast. If you decide on some sulfites, like you have to disclose that on the bottle anyway, you know, then yeah, clean, simple, done. Put a bow on it. But over here, I enjoy this junk food that is so super delicious. Let's face it, hot Cheetos are amazing, right? Let's not kid ourselves. They're the best. They're the best, okay? And they're heavily processed, all kinds of dyes, additives, heavily processed things in them. And some of you very, very consciously pointed out, like, hey, Mike, like, why is it okay here but not okay here? You're talking about food and beverage. You know, why have a standard for wine that is higher than Cheetos? I think they're owned by Frito. What are Cheetos owned by? Frito-Lay? I don't know. Doesn't matter. And you're right. But my issue is not with whether or not additives are used. My issue is whether or not they are disclosed to the consumer. That's the problem. That's why I harp on wine so much. is because you have just so many producers lying to your face about what they actually do to produce their wine. Now, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of producers, both small and large, that do a really great job of producing high-quality wines with minimal intervention and only a handful of, let's say, ingredients in this sense, right? That is true. There are plenty of great options out there. The issue is that you have no idea who they are. And frankly, I don't have any idea who they are. I know more of them because I'm in the industry and I talk to a lot of my peers and in my cohort quite a bit. And we understand what we all do and how we operate in our cellars and what we use, or maybe more importantly, don't use in our winemaking. And many of you have actually asked, like, hey, Mike, can you give me a list of producers that you can for sure say, like, they're not doing any of these things? And the answer is like, yeah, I can give you a pretty good list of like friends that I know really well and I trust them and what they do. But anything past like that immediate friend group, the reality is that I don't even have an idea, right? That's just the reality of it. And if you go back to that additives part two, you know, episode, I tried to go through things like tartaric acid. You know, it's one of the naturally occurring acid groups that's in grapes. If you're getting it in a concentrated form and adding it back to your wine to adjust the pH level and to increase the acidity, do I really have a problem with that? Not really. Do I do it myself? I have once in an extreme circumstance where our wine was on the verge of potentially having spoilage issues. That was in 2022 during that really big heat spike. And that is listed on our website under all those wines that we produce because we're trying to be transparent about it. I'm very lucky that every other vintage that we've ever made, we've never had to add any tartaric acid to it. We just use what's naturally occurring in the grape because we harvest a little earlier. The acidity stays nice and high. The pH level stays nice and low. And we don't have to worry about any spoilage problems. Right? But we started listing that on our website because we felt that it was important for us to be transparent about our production methods and what we use. And as far as I know, there are very few other wineries doing that. I might be able to count them on one hand. Some of them will kind of cheekily put, you know, on their label, organic grapes, yeast, minimal sulfites, or something of that nature, which is probably true. You know, I think Ridge still to this day is one of the only like major brands that puts the ingredients of what they use onto their wines. And again, you have to hope, you know, and I take their word for it. I trust their practices and, you know, I'm glad that they're doing that. And we're trying to do the same. You know, for us, it's clear that a wine label only has so much real estate and space on it, which is why as we move forward with newer vintage, and those of you that have our wines in your cellar, you'll know this, is that we started putting a QR code on the back of all of our wines, which links to a website that tells you about every single wine we've ever made, what we used, and probably more importantly, what we haven't used, what we actually try to adhere to certain FDA guidelines. Even though we're not regulated by them, we're trying to hold ourselves to a high, you know, it is technically a higher standard than what, of course, the TTB recognizes in terms of like what actually we need to disclose. So we're trying to do that kind of stuff. So that's my issue. It's not so much whether or not additives should or shouldn't be used. It's whether or not they are disclosed and that consumers can make an educated decision on the products they purchase. I know full well that a bag of hot Cheetos probably isn't, you know, providing much nutritional content to me, right? They're probably not that great for me. But damn it, they're delicious. And once a month, I enjoy a bag of hot Cheetos as like my cheat snack, right? I don't do it often, but I do it enough that it's like, you know what? I don't care how processed these are. I don't care what additives they use. I can read the bag. I see there's all kinds of nonsense in here, and I'm okay with it. It's fine. That's where I want the wine industry to be, is to give you, the consumer, the knowledge and the power so that you can make an educated decision on what you're buying and what you're consuming, what you're putting into your body. That is why I harp on the additives. So it is up to you, just like it's up to me, and my personal opinion of certain things, it is up to us to decide, are these additives okay? You know, for me personally, in my winemaking, no, they're not. When it comes to wine, I hold it to a very high standard, and there are certain things that I simply will not do. Right? There's a reason why I used, you know, this tartaric acid example in the 2022 vintage when some of our Cabernet was a very high pH level and frankly having potential spoilage issues. It was like, okay, we need to do something to stabilize this wine and make sure that we don't fuck up an entire batch, because that would mean we go out of business. So if I add, I think we added that year in this batch of Cabernet that I'm talking about, we added, I think it was 1.25 grams per liter. You know, so for every liter of, you know, wine that we had, we added about 1.25 grams to this batch of wine that we had. You can go and check our 2022 releases. That's where we had to do that, because that Cabernet was just, it came in super ripe, super high sugar, super low acid, super high pH, and that was going to be a spoilage problem. You could smell it. Even as the fermentation was getting going, you're like, oh, this has like potentially some VA issues. We need to start trying to stabilize this wine as best we can. So we made an executive decision, and we've, as a result, tried to disclose that information on our website to let people know, like, hey, this is what we did, and here's the why we did it. And if people avoid those wines because of that, all right, fine. But I also know that tartaric acid is, again, one of the naturally occurring acid groups. Adding it in, you know, kind of a concentrated form to wine is just enhancing that acid profile. It's not something that's creating any allergen issues. It's not something that's synthetic, right? It's not a chemical, synthetic chemical of any kind. You know, it's like adding lemon juice to your salad to zest it up, basically. Now, some of you might not be happy about that. Some of you might be disappointed in me for doing that. But I'll tell you right now, if it's the difference between having an entire batch of Cabernet go bad versus actually being able to make halfway decent, pretty good actually wine out of it, especially in a challenging year like 2022, I'm choosing the latter. I'm not going to throw tens of thousands of dollars down the drain and put my business at risk when I can use something to fix it and something that is frankly very low impact. That's my opinion on it. You know, are we using Mega Purple? No. Are we using dimethyl dicarbonate? Fuck no. Are we using egg whites? No. Are we using isinglass? No. Are we adding other enzymes? No. Are we adding tannin powder? No. God, no. Are we adding other syrups and extracts? Fuck no. There's a lot of stuff that we avoid for good reason, because I'm not trying to make Coke or Pepsi. I'm trying to, you know, we try to make the best wines that we can given the season that's in front of us. Right? So, you know, this is where kind of I stand, not only as a winemaker trying to make the best wine I can in a year, but also as a consumer. Because there are certain, you know, large production wines that I drink, because, you know, you got to have your Tuesday night pizza wine. I'm like, yeah, of course they manipulate this a little more than I would, but the wine tastes good. It's not super sweet, or it's totally dry. There's no residual sugar. The quality is nice. Did they have to filter it heavily? Did they have to do some fining? Yeah, probably. Probably. But I'm okay with that. Just like when I read the back of a bag of Hot Cheetos, I understand that I can't pronounce half the things on that label, but damn it, they're delicious. And I'm going to eat them anyway. So we're going to continue trying to be as transparent as we can as a brand. We're hoping that many others will continue to do the same, or start to do the same, and really bring you all into our world and have a better understanding of, you know, what these additives are, their impact on wine, and give you the information you need to make an educated decision. Actually, I will give you, we're not going to have time to get into that last topic that I did today, but I'm going to end with this. Many of you reached out over the last couple of weeks, many people did, with the fire that happened in our backyard, north towards Calistoga. Luckily, it burned away from the valley. The smoke burned away from the valley. It had little, if any, impact on the grape growing season. So we got out through that unscathed. There is an organization here, and this is supposed to be a confidential email, so I'm not going to say who it was from, but I can tell you that it was in regards to this fire. and its potential impact. And this organization specifically stated that this is confidential. This is for, you know, winemakers, proprietors only, kind of your ears only kind of thing. And this is not meant to be shared with the general public, which is part of the fucking problem. Because already we had many, many of our clients reach out and say, hey, what's going to happen? We saw there's a fire in Napa. How's harvest going to be affected? What can we expect? You know, is the 2020 season going to be a wash? And the answer is no, very luckily enough. Again, the fire burned away from us. There's no smoke in the valley for an extended period of time. So we're fine. Believe me, we're fine. But you have a certain group out here saying, oh, don't tell the consumers. Don't tell them. They're not going to understand. They could never, you know, we got to keep this locked in. We got to make sure that we manage this. It's scary. It's scary. You know what's more scary? Is being the fucking man behind the curtain trying to pull the strings on a puppet. That's the person I don't trust. I want that curtain to be open. I want to see how the sausage is made. Right? That's how it should be. Transparency in this day and age is everything. Because the reality is, there's somebody that knows that dirty little secret, and it's not going to take much for them to spill the beans, realistically. And in a very short news cycle, you know, things will come and go. It's probably not going to have that much of an effect unless it's something like crazy, you know, crazy, crazy, right? But that's not the way to approach you guys. You don't deserve to be treated that way. You deserve to be told, like, hey, there's a fire in here in Napa. Started up in Calistoga. Luckily enough, the winds were burning from towards the east. It burned out of this valley towards Pope Valley, Etna Springs. And very luckily enough, there has been no reported damage, major damage. I mean, there are a couple of vineyards that are, of course, close by to that fire. They're going to have to wait and see what happens, most likely. But for the overwhelming majority of the valley, it's a non-issue. I feel for those folks that were affected. It sucks. I can only imagine, you know, what they're going to have to go through to try and make quality wine this year. And I'm sure that they're going to do the best they can with what they got. And luckily, technology and lab tests and science have gotten way better since 2020. And we have more ammunition in our arsenal than ever to try and combat things like this. But the wrong thing to do is lie straight to your face and tell you everything's fine. That little guy, don't pay attention to that little guy, right? That's not good enough. It's not good enough. And the industry needs to do better. But we also need to not be hypocrites, right? We need to be okay with saying, hey, I'm not okay with using these additives in my wines, just like I'm not for the overwhelming majority of them. The overwhelming majority of them. There are some that I see as less problematic, less of a problem, less bleh, brain fart. 3, 2, 1. There are some of them that I see as far less problematic and some that I see that are just a non-issue. Whether or not we use them will be a judgment call that we make every harvest and with every wine that we produce. And it's our goal to not manipulate our wines as much as possible. We want to under-manipulate our wines. We want it to be as clean and as simple as possible. Because the second you tweak one thing, you're going to have to tweak something else. And it becomes a chemistry problem. And I failed college chemistry twice. I don't want to have to do that. I don't want to have to deal with that. All right? That's the real reason, is I suck at chemistry. Right? Somehow I still make good wines. I don't know how that happens. Hopefully that sheds a little bit of light onto my opinion. I appreciate those of you that have called me out on it. I really do appreciate it. Because I've certainly talked a very big game about this whole additive thing over many, many years now. And especially now that it's getting, you know, more and more of a spotlight shined on it. And more of you are asking, I think, the right questions about how wines are made and what to expect from certain wines. I think this is important, a very important conversation to continue. And I'm very glad that there are those of you that are willing to call me on my shit and call me on my opinions. And hopefully what we talked about here today, rationalize it enough for you. Hopefully we come to some sort of an agreement. If we don't, let's continue the conversation. Please continue to challenge me. Ask your questions and we'll continue to address them right here on the Wind Up Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning back in. Appreciate all of y'all's patience with me being off and in the woods and in the desert over the last couple of weeks. I'm super excited to keep you all in the loop with all of our harvest happenings. Again, be sure to follow us on our social networks, particularly Instagram and YouTube at MTGA Wines. That's where you're going to see all of our video postings, all of our normal postings for kind of what's going on, all the regular harvest updates. You can also follow us on the social network formerly known as Twitter and the Book of Face. Be sure to check out our website, mtgawines.com. We do have our fall release coming up. We got a new vintage of Merlot, Cabernet, as well as some Pinot Gris that'll be coming your way in just a few short weeks. You can sign up for our mailing list or check out our wine club information at mtgawines.com. I think that's all I got. Hell of an episode. Dive right back into. Appreciate you all for tuning in. Love you so much. And we will see you next time here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.